Thank you, Jimmy. And before we get caught up in the news and sounds of today, let's take a look back at the news and sounds of yesterday, August 26, 1920. The big news story of that day, women will vote. The 19th Amendment becomes the law of the land, and the hand that rocks the cradle may now rock the nation. There was muttering among the men, but for women, the shrill sound of success.
It took George Washington 6 years to rectify men's grievances by war, but it took 72 years to establish women's rights by law. At least 1,000 legal enactments were necessary, and every one was a struggle against ignorant opposition. Woman's suffrage is a long story of hard work and heartache.
Mrs. Carrie Chapman Catt, marking the end of the suffragette's suffering. But the post-war feelings of the younger generation were far from joy and contentment. Their complaint was expressed this way by a writer in the Atlantic Monthly. The older generation, he wrote, had certainly pretty well ruined this world before passing it on to us. They give us this thing, knocked to pieces, leaky, red hot, threatening to blow up, and then they're surprised that we don't accept it with the same attitude of pretty, decorous enthusiasm with which they received it way back in the 80s. But even if the older generation had pretty well ruined the world, you couldn't tell it from the sound of things. As the younger generation shocked their elders with the indecent, syncopated embrace called the foxtrot, the older generation shook their heads in disapproval. A fashion writer in the New York Times reported that the American woman has lifted her skirts far beyond any modest limitation. A scandalous 9 inches above the ground. And if parents needed any further evidence of the new moral letdown, F. Scott Fitzgerald described it vividly in This Side of Paradise. One of his heroines brazenly confessed, "I've kissed dozens of men. I suppose I'll kiss dozens more." Mothers of America shuddered. With the younger generation running wild and President Wilson's high-minded insistence on participation in world affairs, it is perhaps small wonder the country turned to the comforting, everything's going to be all right attitude of Warren G. Harding. And even the women stepped into the campaign battle. Teddy Roosevelt's sister, Corrine Roosevelt Robinson, spoke out.
"I am one who believes that the Republican Party and the Democratic Party have different ideals. The Republican Party is the party of concrete nationalism as opposed to the hazy internationalism of the Democratic Party. Let us strive with might and main to put our beloved country in the safekeeping of Warren Harding and Calvin Coolidge."
And Warren G. Harding and Calvin Coolidge on the Republican ticket ran against James M. Cox and Franklin D. Roosevelt, Democratic nominees. Normalcy was Harding's campaign theme, but there was nothing normal about the way Americans would hear about his election. For the first time ever, they would hear the election returns broadcast on radio.
"In just one moment now, KDKA, in cooperation with the Pittsburgh Post and Sun, will present the latest presidential election returns. It is now apparent that the Republican ticket of Harding and Coolidge is running well ahead of Cox and Roosevelt. At the present time, Harding has collected more than 16 million votes against some 9 million for the Democrats. We'll give you the state vote in just a moment. But first, we'd like to ask you to let us know if this broadcast is reaching you. Please drop us a card, address station KDKA, East Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania."
"I After Harding's election, William Jennings Bryan suggested that President Wilson, then very ill, should resign so that the new president could get right to work. The suggestion was that Wilson resign, making Vice President Marshall the president. He would then appoint Harding Secretary of State. And then Marshall would resign, leaving Secretary of State Harding next in succession to the presidency. The suggestion was not accepted. The return to normalcy had to wait the normal time until Inauguration Day. But the waiting time in 1920 could be spent at the track, watching the great racehorse Man O' War win the Belmont Stakes and the Preakness. Or at the ballpark, you could root for the second baseman of the St. Louis Cardinals, batting champion Rogers Hornsby. At the movies, Charlie Chaplin was starring with Jackie Coogan in The Kid. Mary Pickford was America's sweetheart in Pollyanna. And Will Rogers was in Just Call Me Jim.
I used to whine a song called Casey Jones with one hand, and I used to spin the rope with the other, and then whine into the old empty rain barrel with the other, and then in between the verses, I used to tell jokes about the Senate of the United States. If I needed any new jokes that night, I used to just get the late afternoon papers and read what Congress had done that day, and the audience would die laughing. I wasn't old enough then to know what they was laughing at, but now that I'm a taxpayer, I know exactly what they were laughing at then.
And music lovers were enthralled by the voice of Enrico Caruso, who made his last appearance in New York at the Metropolitan Opera on December 24th. The cost of living was on the rise in 1920. Food prices were high, but that Prohibition bathtub gin was even higher, and so were the people who drank it.
Lordy, how they play it. Boy, they really sway it.
America took a new look at itself through the eyes of Sinclair Lewis in his novel, Main Street. But then America also felt a new pride in itself through the poetry of Carl Sandburg.
Lay me on an anvil, oh God. Beat me and hammer me into a crowbar. Let me pry loose old walls. Let me lift and loosen old foundations. Lay me on an anvil, oh God. Beat me and hammer me into a steel spike. Drive me into the girders that hold a skyscraper together. Take red-hot rivets and fasten me into the central girders. Let me be the great nail holding a skyscraper through blue nights into white stars.
Thank you. All that was life in America in 1920. All that and Eskimo pie, too. Plus a new game called Mahjong. And then, when there was a lull in the party, they got out the Ouija board and they asked Ouija some silly questions like, what will life be like in the future, in some far-off time, say, 42 years from now, or in 1962?